ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Looking at your finances more closely this tax time? On the ABC Business Daily podcast, we break down the stories shaping employment and the economy. And as the financial year comes to a close, we're breaking down what you need to know about super, write-offs, property, and shares in a special tax series. Hear it now. Search ABC Business Daily on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast was produced on the lands of the Awabakal and Gadigal people. One morning, on a street just outside the Lebanese town of Kfar Kila, two men walk through the front gate of a factory building. They stop in their tracks. Something is very, very wrong. Thick grey liquid is flowing out of the front door of the factory. They stare at the goo for a moment and then they start to run. As they rush to get help, the liquid begins to ooze across the car park and onto the street. This is very, very bad. The grey liquid is actually a slow-moving tsunami of wet cement. What on earth was going on here? Well, it has something to do with this.
The Israeli military has begun an operation to destroy a network of tunnels under its northern border.
In late 2018, the Israeli military began what they called Operation Northern Shield, which involved army engineers using big diggers to excavate their way along the border with Lebanon, looking for tunnels dug by the Iran-backed Lebanese militia, Hezbollah.
The Israeli Prime Minister described the tunnels as an unacceptable act of wanton aggression.
While digging near the town of Kfar Kila, they found one of the tunnels they were looking for.
They were built with one purpose in mind, to attack and murder innocent Israeli men, women, and children. This is a grave violation of Israel's sovereignty.
Instead of sending troops over the border or bringing in artillery to blow up the entrance, which they suspected was in a warehouse on the Lebanese side of the border wall, they called in a different kind of weapon, a much slower, more viscous one.
In order to seal up the tunnel, they filled it with 340 truckloads of cement.
The IDF kept pumping in cement until they could see it coming out the other side. And it's this cement that our friends over at the factory were running away from. The two men frantically called for help. They brought in a bobcat to scoop up the cement. They towed their forklifts out of the factory, hoping to save them from certain cement death. Over on the other end of the tunnel, the Israeli army engineers watch all this unfold through their zoom lens camera, no doubt laughing hysterically. Seeing the chaos they'd created, the Israelis declared the job was done and moved on to looking for other tunnels.
The operation to destroy the tunnels is restricted to the Israeli side of the border and is expected to continue for several months.
Life in the town of Kfar Kila went on. In footage from the time, it looks like a pretty pleasant town. Right next to the border wall is a suburban park. There are nice tiled pathways, trees, and outdoor lighting. They also have that outdoor exercise equipment that you never see adults using, but kids like to play with until they hurt themselves. You know the stuff I mean. There are nice apartment buildings. People are driving nice cars. They're going about their business, mostly farming. Figs, olives, fruit, you know, the kinds of things that they farm in Lebanon. But in Kfar Kila, they don't farm figs anymore. There are no kids playing on that exercise equipment. In fact, these days, they don't do anything there anymore because the whole town is gone.
The Israeli occupation army carried out a demolition operation in the town of Kfar Kila in the Marj'iyoun district of southern Lebanon, despite the ceasefire agreement.
This year, the Israeli army engineers, who just a few years ago were pulling Looney Tunes-style hijinks with diggers and cement trucks, went door-to-door in Kfar Kila and loaded each house with dynamite.
The mayor said that 90% of the homes and buildings have been destroyed, while the remaining 10% have been partially destroyed.
And Kfar Kila isn't the only town in the area that's been entirely demolished by the Israeli army. He's the mayor of a town 12 kilometres west of Kfar Kila.
Look, the land is unlivable. Houses are demolished and the homes that aren't destroyed can't be lived in because they're wrecked inside.
In May 2026, investigative journalism outlet Bellingcat counted more than 50 towns that have been damaged or destroyed in southern Lebanon since the start of the war with Iran began in March this year.
Lebanon's president meeting with the US ambassador to Lebanon, urging the Trump administration to pressure Israel to stop bombing parts of the south of his country and demolishing villages near the border.
And yet, despite urging from Donald Trump himself, Bibi isn't stopping his operations in Lebanon.
We have a little dispute over Lebanon, and I say you can do a little softer touch, Bibi. You don't have to knock down a building every time somebody walks into it that's from Hezbollah.
But here's the weird thing about it. More than a year ago, Netanyahu claimed that Hezbollah was out of the picture. He claimed that Israeli attacks had set Hezbollah back decades, that he had eliminated Hezbollah's entire leadership, destroyed most of its weapons, and eliminated thousands of its fighters. So if that's the case, why is he still fighting? And not only with airstrikes and tanks, but with dynamite, demolishing entire towns. Last week, we talked about how Israel has faced threats from militias operating in southern Lebanon right back to the 1970s. And while there were periods of relative peace, the tension has always remained. So this week, we're looking at why Bibi Netanyahu is so desperate to finish the job. When it comes to invading Lebanon, does he have an endgame? Or is he doomed to fight this war forever, no matter how many times the US begs him to stop? I'm Matt Bevan, and this is If You're Listening. Okay, so a couple of years ago, Bibi Netanyahu was feeling on top of the world. He had won a strategic victory that was so extraordinary, so unexpected, and so seemingly total that it seemed like nothing could go wrong for him. The victory was over one man, Hezbollah boss Hassan Nasrallah. And the thing is, Nasrallah is not quite the kind of guy you'd expect him to be. See, Shiite political movements like Hezbollah are generally led by old men. Think of the grey-bearded Ayatollahs of Iran. But when Hassan Nasrallah took control of Hezbollah, he was just 32.
A Hezbollah television studio was perhaps the appropriate place for an audience with the party's young, modernising leader.
And he brought a lot of new ideas to the role, like leaning on mass media to spread Hezbollah's ideology.
Television has presented the Party of God with new propaganda opportunities. Hezbollah's own channel has few frills and an uncomplicated message.
Nasrallah's sermons weren't the kind of fire and brimstone stuff you see from fundamentalist Islamic militia leaders in movies. He had a surprisingly friendly, accessible demeanour. In 2012, for instance, he did an interview with WikiLeaks boss Julian Assange.
This week, I am joined by a guest from a secret location in Lebanon.
And talked about the ways his fighters spoke to each other on their walkie-talkies using local slang so that Israeli spies couldn't understand them.
So, for example, they use certain words, just the village kind of terms. You know, the cooking pot, the donkey, the, you know, the father of the chicken or something like this, you know.
Beware the fearsome warlord, the father of the chicken.
No Israeli intelligence agent or computer analyst is going to understand who the father of the chicken is and why they call him the father of the chicken.
Now, I don't want you to think that I'm trying to make Nasrallah seem harmless. He definitely wasn't. He frequently ordered terrorist attacks on Israeli soldiers and civilians, particularly the ones in towns close to the Lebanese border. In 2006, he had fought Israel to a draw in a brutal cross-border war, killing 165 Israelis and injuring thousands more. Israel was extremely keen to get rid of him, just like they'd got rid of his predecessor.
Israel will remember this day as a day of military achievement.
He had been killed in an airstrike after Israeli intelligence agents figured out where he was. So Nasrallah was understandably concerned about being spied on. He was so concerned that in 2024 he started urging his supporters to get rid of the spy in your pocket. In the sermon he gave on the 13th of February 2024, 4 months after the October 7 attacks, he asked his followers to get rid of their mobile phones. Now, Nasrallah was a relatively modern man. He understood that phones are very, very important. So when he made this request, it was less of a "thou shalt not use your phone" and more of a I know, you love your phone. Everybody loves their phones, but they're helping Israel spy on you, so you gotta get rid of them. He encouraged followers to get their wives and kids to give up their phones too. They were just too much of a security risk. He said that he had given up his phone himself. My brother, he says, put your phone in an iron box, lock it and bury it. You can get it back out when the war with Israel is over. At the time, that war with Israel was going fairly well for Hezbollah. They had launched so many rockets into northern Israel that they had forced Bibi Netanyahu to order the evacuation of tens of thousands of people who lived in Israeli towns along the Lebanese border.
Kiryat Shemona has a haunted feel. A town of 23,000 virtually deserted. Across the north of Israel, 60,000 people have been evacuated.
But keeping up this onslaught on Israel was too complicated to do without any electronic communications. They would need some way of coordinating themselves. Thankfully, they knew someone who was up to the task. They had a contact at a Taiwanese tech company called Gold Apollo, which made pagers. You know, old-school 1990s beepers.
Introducing the most interactive paging system in the world, Gold Apollo two-way paging system.
Hezbollah had bought pagers from this saleswoman before. She told them that she actually had a new line of pagers available and that she'd be happy to give a bunch of them to Hezbollah for free to see if they liked them. Now, all this sounded too good to be true, and it turns out that it was. Because, unfortunately for Hezbollah, their contact at Gold Apollo didn't actually work for Gold Apollo anymore. She now worked for a shell company belonging to the Israeli intelligence service Mossad. Unbeknownst to her and to Hezbollah, the new line of pagers she was selling Hezbollah weren't quite what they seemed. The batteries in the pagers included 3 grams of plastic explosives. By September that year, Hezbollah had 5,000 of these pagers in the hands of their top commanders. By forcing everyone to switch their phones for these pagers, Nasrallah had inadvertently led them directly into a trap. On the 17th of September 2024, the true purpose of those pagers was revealed.
Set to detonate at exactly 3:30 p.m. Thousands of pages leaving behind destruction and even death.
12 people were killed by the explosions and hundreds injured.
The pages, labelled Gold Apollo, were bought by Hezbollah, which apparently considered them more secure than mobile phones.
In a panic, Hezbollah switched to their backup communications technology, the walkie-talkies they had bought a decade ago. You know, the ones they used to discuss the fearsome father of the chicken. Trouble was, the company they bought the walkie-talkies from was also owned by Mossad.
Handheld radios used by members of the armed group detonated simultaneously, a day after thousands of pagers were exploded in a similar fashion.
The exploding walkie-talkies killed and injured even more people than the exploding pagers.
Lebanese authorities say dozens were killed and thousands injured in the dual assaults. Hospitals have been inundated with casualties. Many victims lost fingers or have been blinded.
The following day, Hassan Nasrallah gave a sermon. his casual jokey vibe was gone.
فصائل المقاومة في لبنان وبالتحديد على حزب الله من أجل توقف هذه الجبهة.
He made threats of revenge against Israel, but his heart didn't seem to be in it. He knew that Hezbollah's morale had been devastated by the attacks. A little over a week later, he too was dead.
The Israeli military says it has just confirmed the death of Hezbollah commander Hassan Nasrallah in an airstrike in Lebanon.
But Benjamin Netanyahu wasn't done. He conducted more airstrikes against the Hezbollah leadership.
We took out thousands of terrorists, including Nasrallah himself, and Nasrallah's replacement, and the replacement of his replacement.
Netanyahu said that the eradication of Hezbollah was necessary to provide security to the people of northern Israel once and for all.
They fired missiles and rockets into our cities. They made 60,000 Israelis leave their homes along the Lebanon border, becoming refugees in their own land. We will take whatever action is necessary to restore security and to bring our people safe back to their homes.
By December 2024, there was a ceasefire between Israel and Hezbollah. The Israeli government encouraged the tens of thousands of people of Galilee, the region of northern Israel that had been evacuated for more than a year, to return home. And yet,
more than a week into the ceasefire, many businesses are still shuttered.
People were, understandably, still frightened.
Despite the beauty and the quiet of the north, it may be hard for those wishing to raise families to live so close to the border.
A lot of people want to come back. There is, of course, the question and the fears about their physical safety.
And that's because Hezbollah was still a threat. Even without leaders or pagers or walkie-talkies or phones, individual militants can just fire off a rocket of their own volition.
No one is going to bring their families back into an area where within seconds their entire home can be shattered and blown to pieces.
And herein lies the major issue for Bibi. Despite his success in decapitating Hezbollah's leadership, he had run into basically the same problem everyone who tries to eradicate a terror group has run into in the last 50 years. It's almost impossible to destroy them entirely. See, by the time Nasrallah was killed, Hezbollah had basically become the government of southern Lebanon.
Hezbollah provides social security, education and healthcare, and has 13 MPs in the national parliament. Militarily, Hezbollah is much more powerful than Lebanon's national army.
They run the media, the hospitals, the schools. They own museums. They've been linked to amusement parks. Terrorism academics call them a hybrid organisation, which means you can kill the leader and his replacement.
And the replacement of his replacement.
But regardless of who is at the top, the goals of Hezbollah remain the same. And that's the total destruction of Israel. Taking out their senior leadership might set them back a few years on that goal, but it certainly doesn't eliminate the threat. To Netanyahu, leaving them alone to wither wasn't an option. The Iranian government, which had supported Hezbollah for decades, was still in place. They would help Hezbollah rebuild. But what if the Iranian regime wasn't there anymore? Over many years, Mossad had systematically infiltrated the ranks of the Iranian government with spies. So they knew where the leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, was, and where a bunch of his potential successors were too. While October 7th had been a strategic disaster for Israel, everything they had tried since had gone pretty well for them. So why not trigger the final boss fight? And how did that go for Bibi? Well, let me take you to early 2026.
US and Israeli strikes on Iran have entered their third day, with President Donald Trump saying the war could last 4 to 5 weeks.
As I'm recording this, it's 18 weeks and counting, but anyway.
And tonight, that war is widening. Israel says it struck senior Hezbollah members in Lebanon in strikes that killed at least 31 people, according to the Lebanese Health Ministry.
US and Israeli strikes on Iran led to Hezbollah fighters firing rockets into Galilee. Israel responded with airstrikes of their own, and then an invasion.
We've just arrived here in northern Israel, very close to the Lebanon border, and it's at this point that the IDF has announced an evacuation of the entirety of southern Lebanon, telling people to move north.
Last week, we talked about how Israel has spent decades wrestling with the idea of creating a buffer zone to protect towns along their border with Lebanon. They determined that the buffer zone should be located in Lebanon so that the residents of Israel's north could stay put. So, Israel ordered the total evacuation of part of another country, then invaded that country and started knocking down every village within 10 to 15 kilometres of the Israeli border.
The war between Israel and Hezbollah that erupted in March has forcibly displaced about 1 million people and killed over 3,500.
Israel was creating this buffer zone for its residents in the north by brute force. Invading a country and demolishing its towns is an extraordinary thing for Israel to do. And it's an extraordinary thing for them to continue doing, despite international pleas for them to stop. So why are they still doing it? Well,
Israel goes to the polls in October. It's the first Knesset election since Israel's blackest day, the Hamas attack on October 7, 2023.
At the most recent election in 2022, the parties that form Bibi Netanyahu's coalition formed a government despite winning only 48% of the vote. And a reasonable chunk of that vote came from towns in northern Israel, near the border with Lebanon. Towns that were evacuated when fighting between Hezbollah and Israel began in October 2023. Now, recent polling indicates that residents of those towns are not happy.
A normal person cannot stand the crazy situation we have here. So only with drugs a person can continue on functioning here.
They tell us time and time again that there is a ceasefire, but we keep seeing that it doesn't hold and doesn't exist. Like, a ceasefire here means nothing.
And voters in the region explicitly blame Bibi Netanyahu for their troubles.
Netanyahu's bloc that received about 66% of the voters in the north and now actually receives about 35%.
In Israel, where virtually every election comes down to the wire, this could be decisive for Netanyahu when he faces voters later this year. Most Israelis, particularly in the Galilee, want Israel to continue fighting Hezbollah in southern Lebanon until they're destroyed and maintain a buffer zone until that happens.
I think we should finish with them. After we finish with Hezbollah, we can try and make peace with Lebanon.
Whoever wants to kill us, we're going to get back to them, and we're never going to allow anyone or any terror organization get to us.
Netanyahu's voters want the government to keep going. His political opponents say that the peace deal Donald Trump has signed with Iran is a sign of Netanyahu's weakness.
The deal is bad for Israel, bad for the region. Netanyahu has failed to achieve every single one of the war's objectives as he himself defined them.
Every domestic political signal is telling Netanyahu to continue fighting Hezbollah until every one of them is gone. And every resident of the Galilee can feel secure in their home. And yet his strongest international supporter is telling him to stop.
I'll tell you what, Israel's fighting Hezbollah too long and too many people are being killed. And you don't have to knock down an apartment house every time you're looking for somebody, because there are a lot of people in those apartment houses and they're not all Hezbollah, that I can tell you.
In Trump's eyes, Netanyahu owes him a favor.
If it weren't for Donald Trump, Israel would have been eviscerated.
And he makes sure that Netanyahu knows it too.
He confirmed that he said to Benjamin Netanyahu, "You're effing crazy. You would be in prison if it wasn't for me." That's a reference to Benjamin Netanyahu's corruption charges, which President Trump is trying to have dropped.
President Trump wants Netanyahu to stop what he's doing in Lebanon, because if he doesn't, ending the war that they are both in with Iran is going to be virtually impossible.
Israel's occupation of southern Lebanon jeopardises the peace deal Trump so desperately wants.
Donald Trump joined that war in Iran after Bibi Netanyahu convinced him that it would be easy to win. They both had recently had what they mutually agreed were spectacular tactical victories. Netanyahu had decapitated Hezbollah. Trump had snatched the president of Venezuela out of his bed in the middle of the night. Trump also thought that his interests were aligned with Netanyahu's. They both wanted to topple the Iranian regime. But, as we now know, it hasn't gone as seamlessly as those previous operations. This time, thousands of people have been killed. 1 million Lebanese people are now refugees in their own country. Their homes have been demolished. Tens of thousands of Israelis are afraid to live in their own home. The people who actually elected Trump and Netanyahu aren't happy either. Trump's supporters in America and Netanyahu's supporters in Israel have different opinions about when they want this war to end. The American people want it over now, but the Israelis say it's not done yet. The thing is, they can't both get what they want. If You're Listening is written by me, Matt Bevan. Supervising producer is Kara Jensen-McKinnon. It's produced by Adair Shepherd. So, you know that story about the pagers and the walkie-talkies? It turns out that's not the first time something like this has happened. While researching this episode, I stumbled upon the fascinating story of times people attempting to keep themselves safe from spies have, in fact, invited the spies right into their house. I'll bring you that story on Tuesday. I'll catch you then.